Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the greats check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on 3rd and short. Even 51 greats. Even 51 greats.
And the rest of the 2008 NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
We got a short work week here, kids. Right back at playing football on Sunday afternoon. Welcome inside Patriots Playbook. It's Wednesday, even though we're kind of in Tuesday mode. We're going to try to cram, I guess, 2 days into one today because short work week with Monday Night Football. But I am John Rook. Mike Parenti from Patriots Football Weekly is here. Mike, how's it going?
Not bad, John. How you doing?
Excellent, excellent. Pats did, of course, make some news today just a short while ago, putting Rodney Harrison officially on the reserve injured list, the IR. They've signed Antoine Spahn to replace him on the active roster, and they also signed Dan Connolly, offensive lineman, and Mark Dillard to the practice squad to fill those slots as well. So I can't say that that comes as any terrific surprise to too many people, I would think.
No, we kind of heard over the weekend, or I should say really Monday night, Tuesday morning, that Rodney Harrison would probably be out for the year with the quadricep tear. So that was not much of a shock. Antoine Spahn coming back. There's a guy who's had some experience in the system in camp and on the field also last year as well. So we know what you're kind of getting from him. Obviously, it's not going to be Rodney Harrison. So they're going to have to make some moves in terms of personnel with Brandon Merriweather and James Sanders. So we're going to see that going forward. But yeah, no major surprises, really.
What do you think now are the chances of them possibly going after a guy like John Lynch?
No chance. They could have had Lynch right now. If they wanted Lynch, he would be here today, but they chose Antoine Spahn. Tells you what they think of Lynch, and I think what we all saw from Lynch was not very impressive, and neither has anybody else because he's still unemployed.
Right.
No chance. I don't see any need to bring him back. It's based on name and reputation only. He's not the player he once was, not even close to that, and he had his chance while he was here in the preseason and did not play well, and none of us really thought. I was surprised that he was cut because it was cut. It was like the second round of the cut. I thought he had made it, and then a couple of weeks later, I think they found some other options and said, "Okay, we can do this. We can get rid of this guy." But yeah, there's no chance of him coming back. That ship has already sailed.
Okay, just out of curiosity, do you feel, in your estimation, that the defensive backfield then is set for the time being, or there are other things that potentially could happen here?
Well, something could always happen down the road depending on who becomes available. There's always a chance for another transaction. The way Bill talked about it today in terms of John Lynch was saying, well, you know, our roster's full. Well, if there was somebody out there you wanted, you'd find a way to make that roster spot available. Believe me, they could do it if they wanted to. There are probably some players here who are expendable in terms of strengthening in other areas. So if they had to do so, they would. I can't think of anybody who would become available at this point down the road. But you never know in this league. You know, things happen. Sometimes you find a guy, you can pluck a guy off the street like they've done in the past with a guy like a Mike Stone or somebody or an Artrell Hawkins, and maybe they kind of have a player like that who may have to come in at some point. But right now that guy is Spahn.
Okay, fair enough. So that's the news of the day. Obviously, with a 41-7 win over Denver on Monday night, I know that a lot of fans have to be thinking, and in fact, I've been thinking it. You guys have probably been thinking it as well. This didn't really come as an expected occurrence. This was quite unexpected what happened on Monday night. And it was unexpected for a number of reasons, but certainly the fact that the team had played so poorly the week previous in San Diego, I'm not quite yet sure what to make of what we saw on Monday night. What about you?
Well, I thought they would win the game. I didn't think they'd win 41-7. I was surprised that it was that non-competitive. What to make going forward? I really don't know, John, because this has been a very schizophrenic team from the start of the season. One week we see one thing, then the next week we see something totally different.
Yeah, it's kind of funny because, in fact, I've seen in several different media outlets where people have picked up on the fact that one week the Patriots can score 30, the next week they give up 30.
Yeah,
and it's been
it's been so up and down.
So that would mean that this week, you know, it would be the bad Patriots that would show up against St. Louis if you go by that.
Right. Based on that logic, yes, they're due for another bad game. But I do think, you know, with these two games back-to-back at home, winnable games in my mind, certainly with Denver, the way they had the matchups planned, and also with St. Louis coming in. I know St. Louis has won two in a row, but I'm still not buying this dramatic turnaround yet with the Rams. Maybe a little euphoria from playing for a new coach, and he's doing some different things, and there's a little bit of excitement. But at the end of the day, this is still a better team than St. Louis by far, and I expect them to win that game. What does that mean? Well, we'll see. You know, we want to see some more games against tougher competition, because what we've seen this year has not been good. They go to San Diego and they get blown out. What's going to happen 2 weeks in Indianapolis? I think that'd be a telltale sign, too, because if they come out here, they win these two home games and then go to Lucas Oil Field and they just get run off the turf, that's a problem. Now you're back to where you started again. And then you're back to being that up-and-down team, that inconsistent team that can't string together three wins in a row or win 4 out of 5. We need to see that first before we can come to any sort of conclusion on this team.
I would certainly agree with that, but I would also say, again, trying to recall how most teams feel like they want to be playing their best football post-Thanksgiving, I'm willing to give the Patriots, at least from a general standpoint, a lot of latitude here, and obviously almost the entire month of November in order to, quote-unquote, get their stuff together in an effort to try to become a team that could challenge in the playoffs. Now, certainly I think Indianapolis will be the first litmus test where that's concerned.
Yeah.
I happen to think the next week against Buffalo may be an even bigger game, simply because right now they're a game behind the Bills in the standings.
Yeah, I think that's a bigger game in terms of where you're going forward, because that's a division game and you're chasing the Bills. But certainly, I think Indianapolis is a good test, a good barometer. They have not played particularly well, and again, they were blown out on Sunday by Green Bay, which really surprised me, because I thought they might have turned the corner the way they beat up on Baltimore and the way they scored points in that supposedly great Raven defense. And then they just come out and lay an egg against the Packers. So they're in the same boat, John. What do you make of the Colts? It's the same thing. They've been so up and down.
I think that the two teams kind of mirror each other in terms of their inconsistencies. They've had some injury problems. Obviously, Peyton Manning had a couple of surgeries on his knees that went basically the second one went unknown to everybody, but basically Peyton and Tony Dungy, it appears. And he's still obviously rounding into shape. I got to tell you, and obviously Marvin Harrison has lost a step. And quite frankly, I think the off-field occurrences with Harrison has certainly hurt that team, or at least hurt Marvin enough to where it's affected the team at some point. So, I think that will probably, in all honesty, Michael, I'll probably add to that intrigue when we start talking about that one for real in another week. So I'm not sure how much of a barometer Indianapolis is going to be. I mean, they're kind of lumped in there now at 3-3 with a lot of other teams, not only in the NFL, but in the AFC in terms of the playoff race is concerned. I was looking at one of the power ranking polls earlier today, and they're not in the top 12. In fact, they were like 16-1, 17-0. So I'm thinking, wow, that's definitely middle of the pack. And to me, that's very un-Colt-like, just like what we've seen of the Patriots being un-Patriot-like thus far. So here's a team that obviously is having some problems just like the Patriots are. And it tells me even more so that you've got to take care of business, because the Colts could be Jekyll and Hyde just like the Pats are.
It's funny. A year ago, this game was the historic clash between two undefeated teams, biggest regular season game of all time. And here we are a year later. You could have a team. You could have one team that's 3-4 or 4-3 against maybe a 5-2 or a 4-3 team on the other side.
Right.
Big,
Absolutely.
Big difference of what has happened in a year to both teams. And a lot of it, of course, is injury related.
Place a lot of pressure on both teams, I think, from a different perspective, as opposed to, the number one seed in the conference, which they've been fighting for the last couple of years. Because we started kind of talking about the Rams, and obviously we're trying to mix 2 days into one, recapping a bit from Monday, certainly, but taking a look forward to the Rams as well. Just so those that are just joining us will know, in half an hour we'll have J.C. Pearson, who will be doing the color work on the Fox National Television broadcast with Chris Rose on Sunday afternoon at Gillette. He's going to join us. He's a former defensive back in the NFL, for those that are not familiar. And then Nick Wagner, who's a senior writer for Rams.com, he's also going to join us in our 3 o'clock hour today, so we'll get caught up to date on everything that is the St. Louis Rams. In the meantime, I wanted to step back for a moment to Rodney Harrison, because obviously that's a significant story. Fact is that Rodney Harrison has more than likely played his last down of football for the New England Patriots. So I wanted to ask fans today, while this is fresh and on everybody's minds right now, I've got a two-part question that I want to open up for the email, and so that when we get them, you can fire them off, and then we'll see how we go with that. But right now, number one, in your estimation, is Rodney Harrison a Hall of Famer? Is Rodney Harrison an NFL Hall of Famer? And has he been around with the Patriots long enough to consider him for the Patriots Hall of Fame? a Hall of Fame at Patriot Place. So, you know, there's two separate Halls of Fame. I know he's a fan favorite. He's one of those guys that, you know, in all honesty, you love to have him on your team, but when he's not on your team, and we've talked about this a lot over the years, you know, you hate him. You know, he's one of the most reviled guys in the league. He's still at the top of the dirtiest players in the NFL poll that ESPN.com did before this season started. He was still at the top of the list. And I think that was, you know, a lot of people look at that as a respect factor, that they give him respect for the fact that he's one of the still the hardest hitters in the game. You know, and he's probably up at the top of the list in terms of fines as well, you know, as being, you know, things that have accrued over his time as a player. So I want to ask Patriot fans today, while it's still fresh and hot on their memory, and it looks like, you know, Harrison was definitely put on the IR today, so he's gone for the year. I know that were some questions during PFW in progress. If you think, A, is he a Pro Football Hall of Famer if he's done? Class of 2014, I guess it would be, right? 5 years.
Correct.
Is he a potential Pro Football Hall of Famer in Canton? And is he a potential Patriots Hall of Famer for his time spent as a captain and as a two-time Super Bowl winner in New England? So the email address, webradio@patriots.com, webradio@patriots.com. If you'd like to call, you can do so at 508-543-7482. So I'm going to put you on the spot, Mike Parenti. What do you think about those two questions?
I think he is a borderline NFL Hall of Famer. I think he had some very good years late in his career at New England because he was utilized properly and was clearly playing in a better system with better talent around him. But, of course, he made a strong impact, which I'll get to in the second part of the take. Mm-hmm. But as far as being an NFL Hall of Famer, I don't think he had a lot of great NFL Hall of Fame-type seasons in San Diego. I think he was a very good player, a very hard hitter with the Chargers. Came here and revitalized his career at the end. I think it'd be tough for him to get in, and especially based on his reputation around the league as being a dirty player and being a cheap shot artist, which I think a lot of it's unjustified, but clearly that's the reputation that's out there. That's going to make it difficult for him to get into the NFL Hall of Fame. As far as a Patriot Hall of Famer, I would put him in there because I think he played as important a role in this second wave of this dynasty as any player. And I say that because after 2002, this team was so terrible defensively that year. Could not stop the run. They got blown off the ball. They were an awful, awful football team on defense in 02. They went out in 03 and they brought in a lot of guys to rebuild this defense. And the key part of that was Rodney Harrison, who I thought when he came in 03, immediately set the tone in training camp that year. He was laying people out. He laid out Kevin Falk on a big hit one day in practice, and I remember that being sort of a tone setter, as if to say, you know what, we're not going to get pushed around anymore on defense. That stops today. And it did. And that 0-3 defense, probably the best defense that I've ever seen from this team, and I haven't obviously been around that long, but you know, just from my generation, that's the best I've ever seen, that 0-3 team. And it carried over in 0-4 when they had so many injuries, and Rodney was always the sticking point as a vocal leader and a leader by example back there. And I think for what he did that 03-04 season and going forward, sort of taking this team from just being a, you know, one-year wonder as a title holder to being the next NFL dynasty, I think that's worthy of consideration. And to me, just a nomination and a spot in the Patriot Hall of Fame, no question.
Well, I asked the question only because he will only have played really 6 years or six seasons with the Patriots,
right.
And he's been, you know, knocked out for the season with season-ending injuries 3 of the last 4 years. So he hasn't played a lot of full-time play for the Patriots, even though, as you suggest, he's certainly had some significant contributions. He made the Pro Bowl in 98 and also in 2001 during his 9 years that he played with the Chargers. Let's see, what else? He is the only player in NFL history with 30 sacks and 30 picks. Career.
Yeah, he's definitely got some interesting distinctions.
Well, exactly. You know, during his sixth season with the Patriots, 9 sacks and 8 picks. So he obviously continued that. And because of the... And just because of that 30-30 distinction, I think he's got a very good chance of landing in Canton. I would say that as it stands, that because of that, my guess would be he would also at some point be included in the Patriot Hall of Fame. But as strange as it says, you know, basically only playing 6 years, and some of those years only partial years because of injuries, I'm not sure he qualifies as someone who has been around long enough to hang his hat here to be in the Patriot Hall of Fame. I guess it really depends on what the criteria is, number one. And I think we all have to realize that, you know, the guys upstairs and the Kraft family have a large say in who makes, you know, the Hall of Patriot place.
I think a lot of it is going to end up being just picked on nostalgia, to be honest with you. I think there are so many players from this current run that have contributed so much that they're going to get in because of just the overall success of the team. You follow what I'm saying? Like, the team was great. Oh, yeah, that guy played a big role in that, too. Put him in, put him in. It's almost like when you're retiring numbers and you just retire everybody who had an impact of some sort on your team. But I think the reason I pick Harrison is because the defense made such a dramatic improvement from 0-2 to the defense that we see now, or at least the defense we saw for a good 4 or 5 year stretch. And even with the injuries, I think he was the main cog in that machine over the years. And particularly in 03 and 04. I mean, I think that his contributions to those two Super Bowl teams cannot go unnoticed.
Well, he was fined well over $200,000, at least by the totals that I've kind of counted up here, in his time in the NFL. In fact, one game cost him a check. He was suspended for one game in 2002 for that helmet-to-helmet hit on Jerry Rice when Rice was with Oakland. It cost him a game check of well over $100,000 for that one.
Hey,
so
you hope it's worth it, right?
Yeah, I wonder if because of that, because of the quote-unquote dirty nature of his reputation, if that will keep some who have a say-so in this keeping him away from the Hall for a while. Do you think it will?
Yeah, I think exactly that's what it's going to be. I think his reputation's a big part of it. I think that happens in baseball, happens in every sport, where guys aren't voted in because of the kind of people that others think they are and the reputation they have. If anybody who knows Rodney here knows he's a stand-up guy.
Absolutely.
A class guy, one of the nicest guys you'll talk to in that locker room. So
yeah,
I think it's just tough. You have to get to know a guy before he can make that assumption. But
we can balance his, shall we say, violent nature on the field with the fact that he's a good guy to the media here. The fact is, is he's always been a stand-up guy. He's always been, you know, available, relatively so, whenever, the times are there to talk to. He's always been very forthright in his answers, fairly easy to talk to and interview, seems like a great guy, and I think it's part of the reason why fans love him when he's on your team, just like San Diego fans loved him, and I know a lot of them still think very highly of him, but then when he's off your team, you look at him as, oh my God, I can't believe it.
Right.
That guy's terrible, he's a dirty player. So in that regard, I wonder his ability to translate his true nature, or at least what we think would be his true nature, to the media as being something certainly that will go in his favor.
It's tough to say. I don't know if it's just, you know, some reporters may have that
have
sort of chip on their shoulder for him because
right.
and they may have never met him at all, but they look at all the fines and they look at some of the late hits and the dirty plays and they just think, you know, this guy is just not Hall of Fame caliber. And it can really cloud people's judgment. It's happened in the past. It's happened in other sports where they've tried to pick Hall of Famers and guys don't get in because of the perceptions, not necessarily what they've done on the field. See, I'm just not sure, though, that everything he's done on the field is necessarily Hall of Fame worthy. I think that's a big debate, but I mean, he's definitely close. There's no definitive answer one way or the other for me where I say, no chance or absolutely. I just think, you know, and it may be sitting on the fence on my part, but I really think he's just borderline right now.
Okay, and that's why we asked the question, because I'd love to get, you know, some feedback from fans today based on their opinion of whether or not they think Rodney Harrison is a Pro Football Hall of Famer and or a Patriot Hall of Famer. So please share with us your thoughts on Rodney Harrison webradio@patriots.com. That's our email address, 508-543-7482 is the telephone number. All right, so Harrison is done. Antoine Spahn has been re-signed as well to take, you know, his active spot on the roster. We've seen Brandon Merriweather, I think, this year perhaps come into his own a little bit more. You know, he got his third interception of the season on Monday night in the win over Denver. Likely he will move into the starting role, maybe with an exception or two here and there, but I think it's generally considered that he's probably going to get the first crack at it, won't he?
Are you talking about Merriweather?
Merriweather, yeah.
Yeah, I think he's obviously the starter now by default in that position and next to James Sanders. I think the roles may reverse in terms of who's going to play close to the line and who's going to stay back deep in pass coverage. Because I think now Sanders, and Andy Hart and I agreed on this, Sanders is the guy who will come up, I think, more as the superior tackler among the two. Whereas Merriweather, I think, does a better job in pass coverage playing deep.
Yeah. And I would agree with that.
And now with three interceptions, he's clearly figured something out this year and has worked on his hands And all of a sudden now he's a ball hawk. He's making plays back there. And I think at times when Sanders was left deep and Harrison was playing up close to the line, I saw Sanders make some mistakes on those big plays and just take some funny routes to the ball in coverage. And that's a little bit alarming to me. So perhaps now you can emphasize his skills a little bit more and put him in a position where he's going to be a better football player and be able to do what he does well. Whereas you put Merriweather back there now, at the same time, he plays deep in pass coverage, and I think it strengthens, you know, your defense a bit. The main hit they take without Harrison is just the lack of depth now. So now instead of having Merriweather as your third safety in a certain nickel or dime package, it's now Antoine Spahn.
Right.
So that's the big difference. It's right. The guys after the starters. Because let's be honest, we know Harrison's getting up there in age, and we knew that coming into the season, and we knew Merriweather was a first-round pick from last year looking to make the jump. There were probably some people who thought perhaps Merriweather could be starting by the end of the year. Maybe he would move into that role eventually, naturally.
Mm-hmm.
But now, obviously, it's been forced by injury, so you know perhaps this is the changing of the guard here.
I think that's saying it exactly. I was just going to mention. I think what it has basically transpired here is that this is the changing of the guard. You never like to see it happen due to an injury, but it has sort of hastened the process in terms of sort of passing the torch from player who has Hall of Fame credentials onto someone who came in as a highly touted draft pick and a guy like Brandon Merriweather.
And this is a big opportunity for him too because. You know, he started to make an impact toward the end of last season. He was starting out mostly on special teams, obviously, but he came on strong at the end, got a lot of playing time in the postseason, and had a big training camp this summer, a big preseason. Now he's off to a good start. It has to continue here now because they're really going to depend on him to make those plays and keep making them more so than they were the first 4 or 5 weeks. They don't have that safety net with Harrison anymore. So now it's up to Merriweather. And to really live up to the billing as a number one pick, because you kind of look on the other side of the coin offensively with Lawrence Maroney as a first-round pick, not getting it done. Now he's on IR. They don't really need to see two disappointments in as many years. It's really, something's got to give here, and I think it's time for Merriweather now to step up and keep doing what he's doing, and this will be big for him if he can do that.
Yeah, that was the other thing I was going to mention. Not that it comes as a huge surprise to anybody, but the fact that Lawrence Maroney was put on injured reserve just before the game on Monday, so it means he's done for the year. Are you ready to qualify him as a bust?
Maroney?
Yeah.
I'm really close. I think there's a good chance he's not going to be back next year.
I do, too.
New England.
I told that to somebody Monday night, in fact, Michael, and they looked at me like I had three heads.
Yeah.
It's like, what are you talking about? I mean, he's just in his third year, blah, 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 and this and that. And, I mean, he rushed for almost 100 yards a game over the last six games last year. And I said,
but we haven't seen it. We haven't seen it this year.
Right. We haven't seen it consistently, number one. Number two, that's what makes this year so much of a tremendous disappointment.
Right.
The fact is that we were led to believe that he was finally coming into his own. And here he is. He's taken another huge step backward again. So, I've never been a Maroney fan. You know that. And I've been hammering on him left and right over the course of the last couple of years just because I question his durability. And I think we all have to question his durability. That cannot be doubted any longer.
No.
Says he has other issues. Well, it's time to come out with some of those issues right now. Otherwise, I don't think he'll be a Patriot for very long. And it would not shock me with another year after this one left on his deal if the Patriots found a way to, deal him, cut him, whatever. But at the very least, they are now going to be, in my estimation, in the market for a running back, be it rookie or by trade this next offseason.
Yeah, and with 1 year left on that rookie contract, they can get out of that without really hurting themselves financially.
Okay.
That's not going to really kill the cap. So it could be done. If they really want him out of here, it could get done. Now, at the same time, you like to try to get something in return,
sure.
Something of some sort of value, but I don't know what the market is for an injury-prone running back who says he has issues.
Yeah, what are you going to get?
So what are you really going to get?
Somewhere,
so,
if you're lucky, maybe?
It's one way or the other. If they don't want him back, he will be gone. And I think then, obviously it's a bust. And I think that's what they're leaning towards. So, yeah, I'm leaning toward bust because I haven't seen it. We've seen those flashes, John. We saw it last year in December.
Mm-hmm.
He ran extremely hard. Really carried the team offensively down the stretch because the passing game had slowed up a little bit.
Sure did.
Where teams are starting to figure things out now and they're game planning for the Patriot passing game. And Maroney stepped forward and took the torch there, and he carried the load down the stretch and did a great job in the playoffs as well. But it hasn't carried over this year. Even before he got hurt or before we had any knowledge that he was hurt, he was not running the football well.
This is now three significant players, obviously, this year that have put on IR. guys that all have focal points, you know, two on offense now, one on defense for this football team, and yet they find themselves 4-2 after, you know, 6-7 weeks as it is, and with a resounding victory over Denver on Monday night. What will you take away from the Denver game on Monday night? What left a lasting impression in your mind?
Oh, I would probably say Sammy Morris and the way he carried the load offensively. That was a big night for him for a number of reasons. Number one, because they just did what they had to do against a bad run defense and took advantage. Number two, it was kind of a downer that day because they had just announced the Lawrence Maroney transaction, putting him on IR. And so you're thinking, oh, geez, what are we going to do here? And then Morris comes out with a career-high 138 yards, all in the first half, and absolutely sets the tone from the start. They pushed Denver around defensively, and that's what they needed to do. And that's the one thing I take away from it. Now, we don't know Morris's status going forward. He's now day-to-day, I would presume. And will he play this Sunday? I don't know. It's tough to say. And it's tough to say, given the score at the half, if he was just taken out for precaution.
Well, I kind of thought that was the case because I'd heard from a couple of guys that he was walking around normally after the game.
So there's some positive there. And I think, you know, that's the big thing they need to do. They need to keep running the ball like that. When you run the ball the way they ran it on Monday, that's how Matt Castle has an 18 of 24, three touchdowns, no interceptions.
Mm-hmm.
It's not all on his shoulders.
Right.
And that's why you brought five running backs out of camp this year, because I think they were anticipating a little more resistance from the rest of the league. Well, not just even injuries, but the fact that they were so good last year throwing the ball that teams are going to take that away now, or at least try to, and they needed to have a second weapon in their offense.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why they kept those running backs. And now they're losing those running backs left and right. But if Sammy Morris can fill that void long enough to get you to the postseason, then you see what you can do from there. But you need somebody right now to fill that void. Everybody has to pick up the slack, and it would be really tough if they lost him for an extended period of time.
Yeah, I thought surprisingly so. In fact, Ben Jarvis Green-Ellis ran pretty strong the other night, but I'm not sure whether or not, you know, and with all due respect to him and to the offensive line, which I thought had a good game against the run or run blocking, I thought they were fairly porous, especially in the first half against the pass again, which is one of the problems that this team, you know, needs to work on, and we'll get to in a little bit. But, you know, frankly, I wasn't sure if it was Green-Ellis or if it was that Denver is god-awful
right.
against the run.
Well, when you see Green-Ellis come in and do almost the same thing Morris did in terms of yards per carry, then you kind of think it's the defense a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But he made some nice runs, and he's a strong runner. Bill really talked highly about him today.
Built low to the ground,
too. Yeah, built low to the ground, which is exactly what you want from a running back. So he's got the frame for that. Now, I don't know going forward what sort of option he would be. They really need to get – if they don't have Morris, they need to get Lamont Jordan back.
Absolutely, because Green-Ellis can't be the guy.
He's not going to be the guy right now, and I don't think Kevin Faulk is that guy now anymore either. I think he obviously is a change of pace back, a guy who can catch a lot of passes out of the backfield, a weapon on special teams. He's kind of a jack of all trades.
Carry three or four times a game if you need him to.
Right, but beyond that, it's going to hurt you. And I think the same would go for Green-Ellis. If you gave him 25 carries in a game, I don't think you're getting, you know, 120 yards. You know what I mean? It's going to be difficult, yeah.
Right. So any idea where Lamont Jordan is on his rehab of the calf?
Well, Bill actually seemed a little more optimistic about that today because they asked if he's showing some improvement, and he says, yeah, you know, and said he's day-to-day, you know, so on and so forth, but seemed a little more upbeat about it. And he had said in the past that Jordan is a fast healer, for what it's worth. So I think he'll be back. It's been a couple of weeks now. I would not be surprised if you see him out there on Sunday and you don't see Sammy Morris. That could be sort of the trade-off.
To give him a week to get healthy again.
It may actually be perfect timing where there's no week in between.
Right.
One guy getting hurt, one guy coming back. So now it seems like one guy is coming back as another guy gets hurt. Obviously, you like to have them both out there, but if you can't have them, you need to have at least one. And I would think that Jordan is the guy now close to coming back while Morris – maybe he has to miss a week. Maybe it has to be two. Maybe it's nothing at all. But we're going to find out soon.
Right. All right. All right. Lots of good things then to chew on here to start. Webradio at Patriots.com. Your thoughts on Rodney Harrison, if you think that he is a potential Pro Football Hall of Famer or even a Patriots Hall of Famer as well. We'd like to hear your thoughts on that. So send us your emails, 508-543-7482. That's the telephone number. Coming up in about 10 minutes, J.C. Pearson from Fox will join us. He'll have the analysis duties with Chris Rose of the Rams game coming up on Sunday at Gillette Stadium. Stadium. And our 3 o'clock hour, Nick Wagoner from Rams.com will be joining us. Mike Perrini from Patriots Football Weekly is with us. I'm John Rook. Let's pause here for a timeout, and we'll continue with more in the playbook.
What do I love at Qdoba Mexican Grill?
I love this Qdoba Catering.
If you've got a group of folks to feed, Qdoba Catering is totally the way to go.
You've got the hot taco bar.
The hot nacho bar.
The hot naked burrito bar.
Did I mention that they're hot?
I make the phone call, and they take care of everything.
People come and they
just help themselves.
They come with everything you'd need to feed a group of hungry people.
Marinated grilled chicken and beef.
Three kinds of salsa.
Fresh lettuce.
Guacamole.
Cookies and
brownies.
Homemade tortilla chips.
Everything.
But we get Qdoba Catering for all kinds of different occasions.
Tailgate parties.
Soccer games.
Birthday parties.
Baby shower. For my son's graduation party. It's perfect for office meetings.
You open the door to the conference room, you get the smell of Qdoba.
Hot bars are totally unique.
It's incredible. People love it. It's fresh.
Affordable.
That's the easy way to plan a party.
That's what I love about Qdoba Mexican Grill.
That's what I love about Qdoba Catering.
Have a group to feed? Order a hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering and give them food they'll never forget. What are you going to love at Qdoba?
Big games mean big parties. Feed 20 or more of your friends with a Qdoba hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering. It's fast, fresh, and budget-friendly. Now with 16 Massachusetts locations, opening September at Patriot Place in Kenmore Square. Full menu available at Qdoba.com.
We know you have a busy day ahead of you, and mornings are always tough to get through. So stop by your local Dunkin' Donuts today and grab a freshly ground, freshly brewed Dunkin' Donuts coffee. It's the perfect thing to get you going in the morning. Dunkin' Donuts coffee is made with real Arabica beans, which give it that rich flavor everybody loves. And while you're there, try the new egg white flatbread sandwich from the new DD Smart Menu. Choose from two delicious varieties, turkey sausage or veggie. Both served on multi-grain bread. With under 300 calories, you can now make a smarter choice for breakfast. So, stop into your local Dunkin' Donuts today and try one with a medium hot coffee for only $3.99. Price and participation may vary, plus applicable taxes. Limited time offer.
Well, it's that time of year again where Sunday means you're doing something football. Whether it's tailgating in the parking lot, throwing the pigskin around, or just hanging in and watching the game on the tube, it's all about football. And when you're not watching football or playing football, well, I think we both know you're thinking football. And all that can make you a little hungry. That's why there's the tasty snack wrap from McDonald's. Snack wraps now come in your choice of three flavors. New Chipotle barbecue, honey mustard, and ranch. And they're available with grilled or crispy chicken. Delicious and easy to eat. It's the perfect game time snack. So grab one today. And when you do, if you're looking at that chicken select and it kind of reminds you of a quarterback in the middle of the pocket, except now he's surrounded by cheddar jack cheese, ranch sauce, and lettuce, well, maybe you're thinking just a little too much about football. McDonald's. I'm loving it.
Welcome back inside the playbook for a Wednesday. John Rook with Mike Perrini from PFW. And we'll have J.C. Pearson from Fox coming up in just a few minutes. Of course, the Patriots host the Rams, 1 o'clock Eastern time game. First of all, it'll be good to get back to 1 o'clock Eastern time games, don't you think, Mike?
Yeah, I would like that too. Thank God.
Seems like there's
these overnights are killing us here.
I know the nights are, and unfortunately, we've got a couple of night things still yet to go. But nevertheless, it'd be nice to have an afternoon game, I think, and especially if as the weather starts to go south around here, because it's kind of rough around here today. The Patriots have, and I know you're aware of this, Michael, that it's been a pretty good run against teams in the NFC. In recent seasons. In fact, the overall record against NFC teams for the Patriots since 2001 is 28-5. Now, I don't know if that speaks to just, the dominance of the Patriots or if it speaks to the NFC being, shall we say, a junior league compared to the AFC in a lot of ways over the course of the last few years. I happen to think it's probably a little bit of both.
Oh, I agree.
But St. Louis is intriguing this week in the fact that I'm not sure. A lot like the Patriots, I'm not sure what kind of St. Louis team we're going to see.
Well, this is a team that started 0-4, so I think we're pretty certain, at least I am, that this is not a very good football team. And defensively, it's been bad all year. Now, they've caught a little bit of lightning in the bottle with Jim Haslett coming in and taking over as the head coach after firing Scott Linehan. They brought back an old school cornerback that they had over the years and try to shore up the defense a little bit. They brought back Mark Bulger as a starter. Linehan wanted to go with Trent Green. Hasler came in and says, no, we're all set with that. So it's pretty apparent that Hasler had his own ideas, and when he's finally gotten the chance now to coach again there, he's implementing what he wanted to begin with. But I still think this is a bad, bad football team, and I think you're going to see that on Sunday, and you're going to see that as they sort of come off that high, that euphoria from having a new coach. It's going to go back to the norm again, as what you saw for the first 4 weeks. I mean, they got beat up a couple of times earlier this year, and then they turned the tables on Dallas. You know, but Dallas is not playing with its quarterback right now. So yeah, they got after the Cowboys a little bit with Brad Johnson out there, who was not very effective at all. So I take that with a grain of salt, too.
I'm going to ask this of Nick Wagner in the next hour in hopes of he'll give us an honest answer. But at least from your estimation, do you feel like that Rams team had quit on Scott Linehan?
Yes, I think that was the reason he's gone. I think he lost control of the locker room from what all the reports I read indicated. And when that happens, what do you really have there? You really can't go on any further. If the guy does not have the undivided attention of his players, and his players are not playing hard for him, then he has to go, regardless of anything else. And I think that's kind of the difference between, you know, that situation and what was going on in Oakland, where it seemed like the Raiders were playing hard for Lane Kiffin. Mm-hmm. Even with all the nonsense going on behind the curtains, they were out there playing hard and competing, and they won a couple of games for him, too. Well, they won one game for him, I should say. But they were playing a lot better than we had seen at least last year to me. Excuse me. And whereas with Linehan, it just seemed like he lost control, and players weren't agreeing with the moves he was making. Some of the guys who got cut, who were popular players in the locker room, and then the benching of Mark Bolger, didn't seem like everybody was on board. And that's really the only time that, you know, you can endorse a coaching change during midseason, to me, is if you just don't have the respect of the players anymore. If you've lost the locker room, it's time to move on.
I think Jim Haslett was always thought of as being a very good football coach, and there are some even that feel like he kind of got dealt a raw deal when he left New Orleans, and that would probably be a matter of time before somebody took a shot. To me, it appears that he was one of these now right place at the right time kind of guys.
Yeah, I would agree with that, too. He did an okay job in New Orleans. It wasn't spectacular.
No, he never could seem to get them to that next level.
No.
And, of course, St. Louis is trying to get back to that level. I don't know whether or not he'll be able to take the Rams to the level in which they aspire, which would be, you know, like a division championship type of thing. But, you know, so far you'd have to say with the first two games, I mean, they stun Washington, you know, and beat a Redskins team that a lot of people thought may have been one of the best in the NFC, and then they just plastered the Dallas Cowboys this last week. And of course, the Cowboys are clearly a team that's, you know, in a bit of disarray now with injuries and some other internal things going on. But nevertheless, they beat the crud out of the Cowboys.
Well, the thing is, to me, with Haslett is that he's a defensive coordinator and a guy who's supposed to be a defensive mastermind, and yet his defenses in New Orleans were never any good. And now he's inheriting, and he has, when he was coaching this year for the four games as coordinator, the Rams were an awful defense. So where's this mastermind? It's like the same thing with Brian Billick, who's supposed to be this great offensive genius, you know, in this developer of young quarterbacks. He couldn't find a single quarterback outside of Trent Dilfer that could win any games in Baltimore.
Right.
The only time he won the Super Bowl was the greatest defense ever, and he had a journeyman quarterback who was there to manage the game. So, you know, I think the reputation kind of precedes Haslett a bit. He's not going to win much this year. He's won two in a row now, but they're not going to go out and just turn this around and go 9-7. I don't think that's realistic at all. And I think they'll come back down to earth a little bit. This team plays well here. This team has always played well at Gillette Stadium. This is a good matchup and a good week for them now, coming off this big win over Denver, to build on this a little bit and maybe at least get two in a row before you head on the road again and go to Indianapolis for what should probably be a competitive, if not interesting, game.
Right. By the way, for what it's worth, this is the first of two teams coming to Gillette Stadium this season that are making their first ever appearance in Gillette Stadium.
That's
Rams
right.
And the Cardinals both are making their first ever appearances and playing their first ever games here in the Patriots' relatively new facility. Not that that really means a heck of a lot, but this is a place that the Rams will be totally unfamiliar with.
Yes. Yeah, they were here in 01 at the old Foxborough Stadium. Very competitive game with Kurt Warner that year. Mm-hmm. I think that was a Sunday night game, John, if I recall correctly.
It was, and it was a 24-17 win for the Rams.
Yes.
Of course, that made the Patriots 5-5 after they lost. And, of course, as we all know, they turned around and ripped off a bunch in a row and then faced the Rams again in the Super Bowl. But a lot of people think that that night, certainly, against the Rams, gave the Patriots, at least in the back of their minds, the thought that, hey, we can compete with these guys. If they're the elite of the NFL, we should be too. And so a lot of people look at this last meeting with the Rams in Foxborough as being the game that began to really kind of turn things around.
Yeah, that's kind of an interesting storyline. To me, that game in 01 reminds me of the Giants losing to New England in the season finale last year.
Yep.
Going into the playoffs, taking an undefeated team to the brink, and everybody in that Giant locker room said that gave us the confidence going into the postseason, and then they ran the table. So it's kind of a similar tagline there.
I wonder how many fans remember as well, you know, we're talking about some similarities here between the Patriots and the Rams and some of the history that they've actually had over the years. How many people actually remember back in about 1993 how close they really came to moving to St. Louis?
That's a good point, too. I obviously was not a big part
Please
of the media.
Please tell me you were alive then.
Yeah, I was alive. Yeah, okay. I was about, geez, what, 1993 you said?
Yes, that would have been 15 years ago.
Yeah, okay, so I was 14, so.
Okay, you passed then.
Yeah,
but
I
But you would have been
certainly,
a football fan. You certainly were a football fan.
Yeah, I was certainly cognizant of what was going on around here at the time, you know, so I knew what was the story. Yeah, you're right. They were real close to making that
they
move
were
to St. Louis.
Very close.
So.
James Bush Orthwine, who bought the team and took it away and basically took it for a song and a dance away from Victor Kiam. They were very close to moving the team to St. Louis, and they had, you know, buyers and everything all set until the Crafts ultimately stepped in, which, you know, basically saved the franchise. But, yeah, the Patriots had one foot out the door headed for St. Louis.
You know, it's funny. We're talking about, John, you and I, about what to expect from this team going forward. And we had an email from one of our pals, James in Roanoke Rapids, who asked us and says, hey, I want to know if what we saw on the field Monday night was a Patriot team we can expect to see more of in the season. Or was the results just a product of a Patriots team determined to prove something combined with Denver's poor play? Now, see, I definitely think a lot of it was Denver, too. I mean, they're a bad team to me defensively, and I think a little bit overrated overall, just based on what their record is and how the talent really has panned out. But at the same time, you got to give the Patriots credit for coming out and forcing five turnovers, taking advantage of that differential, scoring points off those turnovers, and finally getting something done in the red zone after a little bit of a sluggish start on Monday night. And to me, that's the biggest, those are two of the big factors there. So, but again, we really don't know going forward what's going to happen. And would anybody, and honestly, as bad as the Rams are and as bad as I say they are now, would you be shocked if they came out and lost Sunday given the back and forth we've seen all year?
No.
Right.
No, not at all. And I think that's part of the thing that's so unpredictable about not only the Patriots, but certainly about the Rams as well, is the fact that, you know, the Patriots have been up and down and up and down, just kind of like, you know, being on a swing set. And let's get into a little bit of that if we can. J.C. Pearson, who will be a part of the NFL on Fox play-by-play team with Chris Rose on Sunday at Gillette Stadium. He's a former Kansas City and Minnesota Vikings defensive back in the NFL. He joins us here inside the playbook. J.C., it's John Rook and Mike Parenti. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing?
Thanks
for
having
me.
Excellent. Can you make sure, Dan, that you have him pipe through to me? Yeah, there we go. Gotcha. All right, now we got you. JC, how's it going?
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing?
Doing all right. Doing all right.
Everything's fantastic here, especially after Monday night's game. What were your thoughts on watching the Patriots against the Broncos?
Well, they look good, definitely. But my first thought was, are they back? Are they that good? Or was Denver that bad?
Yeah.
You know, the Patriots, you know, I heard you guys talking a few minutes ago. Obviously, they've been up and down this year. And, you know, you don't know which team you're going to get, really. And, you know, it seemed like, and I'm wondering if that game last night was kind of the game that they turned the corner and they're getting back to where they were previously. Obviously, they're not going to, you know, without Tom Brady, without Maroney, without Rodney Harrison, they're not going to be the team they were last year. But, you know, I'm wondering if they're going to be more consistent than they've been so far this year.
I think that in this particular instance, we're all thinking the very same thing. We're not really sure whether or not it was Denver and their inability to stop the run or if the Patriots were really that good going up the middle. We're not sure. And we're really not sure what kind of team I think St. Louis is going to bring in on Sunday afternoon, simply because of what we've seen over the last couple of weeks. It's been a great step in the right direction, at least for their program under Coach Haslett. But it tells me that it looks like those players had kind of given up on Scott Linehan, so I guess any change was going to be a good change.
Right, and just a breath of fresh air for them, I think. The same players, pretty much the same system, but now they're getting more production out of those guys. Seem to have more energy, as well as New England did on Monday. Seemed like they had more energy than I saw them earlier in the year as well. And you know, for the Rams, you know, I think Hazlitt, he's an intense guy, but I think just the reality that, hey, they made some changes. They fired the head coach, so they wouldn't hesitate to get rid of any of the players. I think sometimes that reality has to slap you in the face and wake you up and get you to play a little bit.
Do you think St. Louis is sort of feeding off that right now, these last couple of games, where there's a bit of a change of scenery and they have some kind of euphoria playing for a new coach? And if so, do you expect it to kind of wear off at some point?
Well, I think the euphoria has come from their last two games. I don't know if it's so much from Hazlitt, but the fact that they beat Washington and beat Dallas, I think, gives them a lot of confidence going into New England. And now they're not, you know, doubting themselves. Now I think they really believe that they can go up there and win after beating those two teams in the NFC East, which I think a few weeks ago, if they hadn't have made the change, or even if they did make the change and didn't win those two games, you know, I think New England would probably run right through them because they probably wouldn't believe that they could play with New England. Now I think it's a whole different ball game because their confidence level is there, and I really think that they probably believe that they can go up there and win now.
JC, let's build on that for just a minute if we can, because I know you're just getting into your study for this week, especially on the Rams where they're concerned. But where do you feel like their overall improvement really has come from over these last couple of weeks since Coach Hazlitt has taken over?
It's been defensively. Mm-hmm. And like I said, on both sides of the ball, it's the same guys. It's not like they had any superstars injured and they got those guys back. They've all been there. Defensively, they were giving up way, way too many big plays over the top, getting beaten in the secondary. They've really improved that. Leonard Little was a guy that was kind of banged up. He's getting healthier, so now they're getting to the quarterback a little better. I think it really starts there. And then with Steven Jackson running the ball, you know, everybody knows he held out of training camp, so he probably wasn't in the best shape the first few weeks, but he's really come on the last couple of weeks as well. And, you know, they're starting to play well. I think Mark Bulger, early on in the year, I had them against Seattle, and he really didn't look like a good quarterback. He looked like he was a little gun-shy, like he really wasn't sure of himself. And what I saw last week or the last 2 weeks is a guy that is more comfortable, like the Bulger of old. So I think they're really starting to come around and play up to their potential.
Well, we are trying to, you know, take a look at St. Louis, obviously, through a little bit different set of eyes, and the concerns that the Patriots have, obviously, with the fact that it's been such an up-and-down team and an up-and-down season, and now we've put two more players within the last couple of days on injured reserve this year in Lawrence Maroney and Rodney Harrison. So the injuries have certainly hit New England, and yet they have figured out a way at least to, play at least close to where they have been the last couple of years. I'm wondering if you see anything in the Patriots that tells you that they can perhaps sustain somewhat what they may have shown on Monday night.
Well, the thing about the Patriots that is so impressive throughout the league, and people always talk about this, is that they've always found the ability to plug people in, guys that, you know, probably weren't superstars elsewhere, guys that you've never really heard of, might be young rookie guys, maybe free agents. They've always been able to plug those guys into that system and still be very successful. And, you know, you've got to give Belichick and that staff a lot of credit for that, is that when I watch those guys, they really tailor, they kind of make their system geared around what their players are able to do. And a lot of coaches don't do that. A lot of coaches just have their system and they try to make their players fit the system, and that doesn't always work. And I think, traditionally, New England has been a team that makes adjustments to the strengths of the guys playing. So I think, obviously, you know, Tom Brady's been out. Maroney is now out. Harrison is out. You know, I think they'll adjust their system just a bit to do what those guys do best, meaning the backup guys,
right,
as opposed to just making them try to fit whatever Rodney Harrison and Maroney used to do.
What do you like about this Patriot team as you look at them right now? What stands out to you in terms of doing a really solid job?
Well, the best thing about them is that they've done it, and there's no substitute for that. They still have a lot of guys on that team, a lot of veterans that can play well, that have been there. They know how to win. And that may sound cliche-ish, but it's really not, because you'd be surprised at expecting to win and knowing how to win versus a team like, say, St. Louis, who is really, you know, they hope to win. They're still not really sure that every time we step on that field, we should win if we play up to our expectations. And, you know, you hear everybody has talent around the league, no question, but you always hear that the game is won mentally. And I think they have that edge, and they'll continue to have that edge. And if they can get the quarterback playing at a high level, keep the running game going, first of all, and take a lot of pressure off of him so he doesn't have to try to win the game himself, you know, I think they'll win a lot of games this year.
You know, it seems like we're just looking at some of the stuff on the Rams website right now. They released Eddie Kennison yesterday, and now they're moving up some players. And it seems like since Hazlitt took over that there have been a lot of changes made immediately, whether it be bringing back Bulger or now a move made here. Was there that much of a divide, you think, on that coaching staff between what Hazlitt or what Linehan was doing and what the players and coaches thought should be done?
Yeah, I think there definitely was. And, you know, Linehan's time had come. It really had. And the guys, the morale on that team just wasn't any good. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I talked about expecting to win and wanting to win. Yeah, everybody says we want to win, but they really didn't seem like the energy was there. And as soon as something bad happened, whether it was play calling or whatever the case may be, it seemed like they would go in the tank. But now they seem to be re-energized, you know, rejuvenated. And you mentioned, you know, Eddie Kennison getting cut, the Linehan firing. One thing about players is that the greatest motivator for players is fear. And if you ever fear like you're going to lose your job or you're going to lose your position, man, you turn it. You may think you're playing hard, but until you get called out and put, you know, put on the front line, you turn your game up. And I think that's what happened to a lot of those guys. Hazlitt has come in, he's real intense, and he's called some guys out, and you either respond or you get cut or benched. And I think, you know, some of those guys are responding.
I think that's kind of the neat thing about it. When you watch a team try to turn it around and do an about-face during the course of a season, what kind of energy gets injected into the system? And above all, I think Jim Hazlitt has certainly brought that to St. Louis, because 2 weeks ago, before that game against Washington, I think St. Louis was considered maybe one of the worst, if not the worst, team in the NFL.
Yeah, how funny the matter of a couple weeks makes, huh? They were considered, them or Kansas City, the worst team in the league.
Yeah.
And now they go out, they beat the Redskins, then they beat America's team, the Cowboys, who a lot of people thought just a few weeks ago was the best team in the league.
Yeah.
And now, you know, people look at you in a whole different light.
Well, that's the beauty of the NFL. Things can turn, really, in a matter of days, if not a couple of weeks. And I think it's done that for St. Louis, or at least it appears that it's done that for St. Louis. It may be that way for the Patriots, but the biggest question around here, though, JC, is the fact that we're not sure which Patriot team shows up from week to week. It seems like 1 week they can score 30, and the next week they give up 30. So still looking for some consistency in New England.
Yeah, no question. But, you know, obviously the expectation level there is so much higher also. You know, it's surprising to me and funny to me. They're 4-2, but people are like, you know, everybody's kind of written them off. They're not very good anymore. They're not. But, you know, you're 4-2, so you're still doing something right. It's just that the expectation level and of what they've done, you know, in the past few years is, you know, everybody expects them to be undefeated, you know, and if you lose a game, then all of a sudden, you know, the world's coming to an end. They still have a very good nucleus up there, obviously battling some injuries, but they're still a very good team. Like you said, they have to have some consistency and get some more consistency, but, you know, I think that'll work itself out.
Well, why do you think that is? Why do you think the perception is that even with a guy like Tom Brady going down, why do you think media, why do you think national guys have given up on the Patriots?
Well, just because the expectations, again, you know, they're undefeated last year, you know, through the regular season all the way to the Super Bowl. And so people expect them to win. They expect them to blow everybody out. They put up, you know, crazy numbers last year. And everybody knows that you're not going to duplicate those numbers. But, you know, the expectations for not just last year, but the previous years, you know, they've been so good for so long. You know, obviously with Tom Brady going down, that was going to be a big loss. But still, people think Patriots, they still have everybody else. They've got Randy Moss. They've got all these other guys. And, you know, they expect for them to go blow everybody out every week. And that's just not the NFL.
No, it is not. Well, so what are your expectations then for this Sunday and whether or not you think St. Louis will be able to make this a competitive game? I think we all feel here that it will be because we don't know what kind of a what kind of a Patriots team we'll see. But what are your expectations for Sunday?
Right. Well, I think it's going to definitely be a competitive game. I'm sure the Rams are going to come in and focus on stopping the run and trying to make Matt Castle beat them. I'm sure that's going to be the focus throughout the year. People are going to want to see if Matt Castle can win a game for them. I think defensively they've got to continue to play well and take the ball away. They can't give up the big plays down the field like they did against San Diego because that's on film. So don't think that Mark Bolger and Torrey Holt and this kid Donnie Avery, who's their speed receiver now, they're wanting to go down the field, I'm sure, because people have seen other people have success against them. So they're going to have to limit the big plays, and then Matt Castle's going to have to not turn the ball over. You know, just basic, simple stuff, and it all sounds cliche-ish, but those are the things that really win games for you.
Good stuff. J.C. Pearson, again, a former Kansas City and Minnesota defensive back, a part of the NFL on Fox broadcast crew. He'll be in Gillette Stadium on Sunday for the Patriots and the St. Louis Rams. J.C., thank you for the time today. We'll look forward to seeing you on Sunday.
Well, thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
All right.
My
take
pleasure.
Care.
Thank
Bye.
You. Pretty good insight, I thought,
yeah.
Overall, Mike. Fact is that, you know, as he kind of goes through his progressions and he learns what the Rams are all about and the Patriots are all about and the fact that he's seen the Rams before, it sounds like at least there's a little bit of intrigue added to the fact that St. Louis, having won the last couple of games that they've played, certainly should make this a more competitive game than it looked like it was going to be 2 or 3 weeks ago.
Well, it makes it a little bit more interesting because if they had been 0-6 coming in here, I don't know if anybody would really be up for this game at all, but now you're facing a team that's won a couple of games in a row and has a new coach, and so it's still not a big barometer to me. That's going to be next week, but you still want to see how this team responds after a big victory. Now, what kind of carryover effect do we get now? Because you know you can be high 1 minute and very low the next. So we want to see if these peaks and valleys continue, regardless of the opponent. Are they going to come out with that same intensity, that same energy? Are they going to be talking about having fun and doing all those things again on Sunday as they were Monday night against Denver? That's the big question to me.
Right. Well, I know you got to get off and do some writing and stuff, but I'm going to put you on the spot first.
Sure.
Very quickly. What are your thoughts then for Sunday and whether or not the Patriots get a win?
I think they win by at least 2 touchdowns.
Really? That big?
Yeah, and it could be a late touchdown, but I think it's one of those games that could be a little sluggish early, but eventually they will wear down St. Louis with their own running game, regardless of who's out there, because I don't think the Rams have a very good run defense.
They don't.
I think they will run the football, and I think Castle will again be efficient. And I think you're just starting to see some minor improvements from him on a weekly basis. Small little things, but nonetheless improvements. And I think we're going to see that trend continue on Sunday.
Interesting. All right, Mike. Hey, thanks. Thanks, as always.
All right,
appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you, John.
All right, you got it. Mike Parenti from Patriots Football Weekly. We'll pause here for a timeout. We've got to come back on the other side again. Don't forget your emails, kids. Webradio@patriots.com is the address. Your thoughts on Rodney Harrison being put on the injured reserve list today. He's done for the year. He certainly could be done for his career. And whether or not you think he is a Pro Football Hall of Famer or a Patriots Hall of Famer. Your thoughts on Rodney Harrison, your thoughts on the Rams. Nick Wagner, the senior writer for Rams.com, will join us in hour number two in just a few minutes right here inside the Playbook.
What do I love at Qdoba Mexican Grill?
I love this Qdoba Catering.
If you've got a group of folks to feed, Qdoba Catering is totally the way to go.
You've got the hot taco bar.
The hot nacho bar.
The hot naked burrito bar.
Did I mention that they're hot?
I make the phone call and they take care of everything.
People come and they
just help themselves.
They come with everything you'd need to feed a group of hungry people.
Marinated grilled chicken and beef.
3 kinds of salsa.
Fresh lettuce.
Guacamole.
Cookies and
brownies.
Homemade tortilla chips.
Everything.
Oh, we get Qdoba Catering for all kinds of different occasions.
Tailgate parties.
Soccer games.
Birthday parties.
Baby shower. For my son's graduation. Party. It's perfect for office meetings.
You open the door to the conference room, you get the smell of Qdoba.
Hot bars are totally unique.
It's incredible. People love it. It's fresh.
Affordable.
That's the easy way to plan a party.
That's what I love about Qdoba Mexican Grill.
That's what I love about Qdoba Catering.
Have a group to feed? Order a hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering and give them food they'll never forget. What are you going to love at Qdoba?
Big games mean big parties. Feed 20 or more of your friends with a Qdoba hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering. It's fast, fresh, and budget-friendly. Now with 16 Massachusetts locations, opening September at Patriot Place and Kenmore Square. Full menu available at Qdoba.com. We know you have a busy day ahead of you, and mornings are always tough to get through.
So stop by your local Dunkin' Donuts today and grab a freshly ground, freshly brewed Dunkin' Donuts coffee. It's the perfect thing to get you going in the morning. Dunkin' Donuts coffee is made with real Arabica beans, which give it that rich flavor everybody loves. And while you're there, try the new egg white flatbread sandwich from the new DD Smart Menu. Choose from two delicious varieties, turkey sausage or veggie. Both served on multi-grain bread. With under 300 calories, you can now make a smarter choice for breakfast. So, stop into your local Dunkin' Donuts today and try one with a medium hot coffee for only $3.99. Price and participation may vary, plus applicable taxes. Limited time offer.
Well, it's that time of year again where Sunday means you're doing something football. Whether it's tailgating in the parking lot, throwing the pigskin around, or just hanging in and watching the game on the tube, it's all about football. And when you're not watching football or playing football, well, I think we both know you're thinking football. And all that can make you a little hungry. That's why there's the tasty snack wrap from McDonald's. Snack wraps now come in your choice of three flavors. New Chipotle barbecue, honey mustard, and ranch. And they're available with grilled or crispy chicken. Delicious and easy to eat. It's the perfect game time snack. So grab one today. And when you do, if you're looking at that chicken select and it kind of reminds you of a quarterback in the middle of the pocket, except now he's surrounded by cheddar jack cheese, ranch sauce, and lettuce, well, maybe you're thinking just a little too much about football. McDonald's. I'm loving it.
When you've got a lineman-size hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, first down franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mild and hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine and Associate Grocers of New England and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
Hour number two inside Patriots Playbook for a Wednesday here on Patriots.com radio. Again, my thanks to Mike Parenti coming in on a Wednesday, as he always does in the opening hour of the program. And certainly J.C. Pearson will be part of the NFL on Fox Network broadcast on Sunday here from Gillette. In 15 minutes, Nick Wagner, senior writer from Rams.com, will be joining us, and we'll get to some of your emails. I have to admit that I'm a little perplexed by what I saw on Monday night. I talked a little bit about this in the opening hour of the program with Michael just a little while ago. So I'm not quite ready to say that, you know, this is a team that can be this or should be that. I don't know what we're going to see. Guess what I'm really looking for is some consistency here. That's the main thing. It leaves me also kind of wondering, all right, what kind of Rams team are we going to see on Sunday as well? I also have to admit that after a 41-7 win on Monday night. Normally, since I said earlier that, you know, because of the schedule this week, we had to combine kind of Tuesday and Wednesday's show into one day today. So I guess this qualifies as Nitpick Tuesday, as we normally do, pick the nits out of the previous week's game. I can't find too many nits to pick. I really can't. I think that we can, you know, I think the one thing that really bothers me the most about Monday night's game was the inconsistent play on the offensive line. I did see some improvement, certainly where the run game was concerned, and I think largely a lot of that can be attributed to Stephen Neal's return, although he played, I believe, just second half on Monday night, as I recall right off the top of my head. I don't have the play charts in front of me. But I mean, certainly, I think you can, you know, count some of that. I mean, he did a lot of his damage in the first half without Neal in there. Sammy Morris did, rather. And I felt like the offensive line, in terms of pass blocking, is still getting punked. I still feel like they're susceptible to the speed rush on the end, And I still feel like they're susceptible to, you know, the blitz right up the middle when they overpower, you know, Copen and go 2-on-1 against him. The Patriots still have a lot of work to do where the pass rush is concerned. And granted, some of it, of the 6 sacks that Matt Castle had to go through on Monday night, I'm willing to give him blame for maybe a couple of them. Largely because he probably held on to the ball too long. And I could sense, especially in the second half of the game on Monday, I could sense the fans, whenever Castle would go back to pass and then he would start to move out of the pocket. Fans screaming in the stands, throw the ball! Throw the ball! You may have been one of them yourself. Get rid of it! Get rid of it! Throw it away! Whatever it may be. And I think that's his biggest fault. I think, you know, sometimes Castle still holds on to the ball too long. And so I think you could probably, you know, put the blame of at least a couple of those sacks on him from Monday. But 4 sacks is still too many for my liking. It's way too many for a team that, again, had 3 Pro Bowl offensive linemen last year. And I'm kind of holding this offensive line up to those standards. And I realize that that may or may not be fair, but when you consider the guys who made the Pro Bowl last year, and those guys are still with this football team, then what's the difference? I think we're realizing now that Tom Brady had an ability to, you know, make all of the players around him offensively better, especially those on the offensive line, because of his ability to, you know, step into the little crease in the pocket or to sidestep or to, you know, get rid of the ball quickly, to snap off a throw like he had to, or even to throw one away. Whereas Matt Castle's still trying to go down his list of progressions and checkoffs if his primary receiver is not open. And then he's scrambling out of the pocket, and he's looking for options C, D, E, and F down the field, and he's got guys barreling down on him. You just can't undervalue the ability to know the offense and to have replicated that time after time after time. And it's only going to take more time until Castle can become more comfortable. So for anybody to expect that he was going to be anywhere close to Tom Brady, it's ludicrous. It's idiocy. It's ridiculousness. You can see, however, where he is improving. It's a slow learning curve. And it's only going to continue to get better with more repetitions in practice, with more familiarity with the receivers, more team chemistry, more chances, more game-like situations in practice as well as in the games themselves. I mean, I sensed that at least he moved out of a dangerous situation in the pocket better than he had previously. I don't know about you. And I think that's, again, where the offensive line has to continue to improve, because they have to know Matt Castle. They have to know him. They have to anticipate, okay, we got to go to, you know, 1-1000, 2-1000, 3-1000, and then Castle's going to take off, right? Something along those lines anyway. So if they can think like that and they can be in sync with him, then I think we'll probably see better pass blocking. Right now, they're just still not there yet, and hopefully it will get that way before Castle gets himself killed, and then it's going to be Kevin O'Connell's turn. I'm not so sure we want to go through starting all over again, do we? But that's what's going to happen if Castle doesn't figure out a way to get rid of the football. So I guess, you know, my nitpick is really twofold. Number one, pass blocking for the offensive line. And number two, Castle's inability to really recognize when to get rid of the ball or take a sack. How's that for nitpick? And if you have your nitpicks, you can also include them, webradio@patriots.com, in addition to your thoughts on Rodney Harrison and whether or not he thinks, or whether or not you think, he is a Pro Football Hall of Famer or a Patriots Hall of Famer in some 5 years from now, if indeed his career is over, as we, I think, are all expecting that it will be, as, again, he was put on the injured reserve list today. All right, let's get to a couple of emails. This one comes from our friend John, who says, John, my nitpick for today, after a great game on Monday night, it's excuse time. Beginning with the Monday Night Football announce team. And by the way, you know, honestly, has anybody absorbed more abuse in terms of announcers than Tony Kornheiser? I don't actually think he does a terrible job. Does he really add any analysis? No. But then again, he's not there to add analysis. And then you would say, well, then why is he there overall? I'm going to tell you why Tony Kornheiser is there, okay? This is why Tony Kornheiser is there. Number one, they love him at ESPN. They love him because he's irreverent, okay? They love him because he has a sort of an everyman type of approach to his writing and to his radio broadcasting when he was a full-time radio broadcaster with ESPN Radio. And obviously people love him for his Washington Post columns over the year, and he's doing radio again, and they just like Tony's way of, self-deprecating way, if you will, of not only attacking him, but attacking other people and being kind of hip about it. And even though he may be, older 50s, 60s age, he's got a very 30s attitude about him. That's why they love him. He transcends, generations, really. He can relate to guys who are my age, and I'm 49 and older than me. He relates to guys like that, and yet I think in a lot of ways Tony Kornheiser can also relate to those who are younger, and that's why they like him, because he can appeal to a lot of different people. Or he can tick off a lot of people, but the fact is that people watch and they listen. And if they're reacting to Tony Kornheiser, hey, did you hear what Kornheiser said? What a knucklehead. The fact that he's reacting, they don't care. The fact is that you're taking the time to react. You still watch. If his negative performances, directly impacted ratings, he'd be gone like you know what through a goose as soon as, you know, I mean, that quickly. But they like his chemistry with Mike Tirico, and they like the fact that, you know, Jaws, who, you know, was obviously on the program this last week, and obviously is a fabulous analyst and does his job as well as anybody, in the NFL today. They just like him being a sort of a glue guy, a guy that Dennis Miller never was. They like Tony Kornheiser as a modern-day Howard Cosell. Okay? There you go. Those of you who are old enough to remember Monday Night Football in all of its glory with, Frank Gifford and Dandy Don Meredith and Howard Cosell, he's Howard. He's the Cosell role. He's the glue guy. He's the different. Cosell didn't have any particular football expertise when he first started out. He was a journalist. He was a radio guy for a number of years. He was also a writer for a number of years. And hello, that's exactly what Kornheiser is. You know, Cosell was significant because of the, you know, nasty twang he had and the accent that he had and that people like to make fun of. And people make fun of Tony Kornheiser for different reasons, but they make fun of him. Doesn't matter. They know that Kornheiser can take it. He can take what you dish out, and he can spit it right back at you. And that's what Cosell did so very, very well for a number of years. And Cosell obviously developed unbelievable chemistry on the air with Gifford and Meredith. And it's the same thing they're hoping that Kornheiser will eventually do with Tirico and Jaworski. And frankly, you know, I think it's gotten better. I think it's gotten better over last year when they really kind of first got started. So we'll see if the high muckety mucks at ESPN continue with that thought process. But my guess is Kornheiser is going to stick around for a while. So, you know, anyway, that's my 2 cents worth on the Monday Night Football announce team. And, you know, and Mike Tirico, I will admit, he's a friend. We spoke briefly before the game the other night and caught up on things due to his time having worked in television in Syracuse and his time covering teams in the Big East and running into each other on rare occasions at ESPN in Bristol. So, I think Mike's a solid play-by-play guy, very solid. He's not spectacular. He's solid. Kornheiser, I don't have as much experience with, although I certainly know him, and I've actually filled in on his shift from time to time on ESPN Radio when he was doing his show several years ago. But I'm telling you, they love him because he is, you know, the 21st century version of Howard Cosell, period. All right, let me get back now to John's email. He says, Monday Night Football announced team. They started off by saying how the Pats went from an undefeated team to barely surviving after losing Brady and now Maroney. And against a high-powered passing team like Denver, blah, blah, blah. But in the second half, the tone changed. Suddenly, they were saying how good, or saying how, and I quote, anybody can run on Denver, anybody. So once again, let's not give credit to a team who reached down after a bad loss and came out fired up. But now, all the local media is asking the question, was it a good Pats performance or a bad Denver performance? See, that's, John, that's a great question, and we asked that in the opening hour of the show today. Not really sure. And I think it's going to take this week, and as Mike Parenti suggested, it's probably going to take next week's game against Indianapolis to determine whether or not it was a good Pats performance or a bad Denver performance that we saw this past Monday. I don't think we know. The Patriots are up and down like the stock market, and obviously mostly down. And you yourself, I know, John, and so many other fans had to say, oh, my God, anybody can run on Denver. That phrase had to have crossed your mind because you were stunned. Admit it. You were stunned that the Patriots could run on the Broncos like they did. I mean, you knew that the Denver, you know, team was being criticized as not being good against the run. You knew that going in. But to see the Patriots chew up for 258 yards on the ground on Monday night, come on. You were surprised just like I was and the rest of the media was. And you had to ask the question, wow, looks like anybody can run on Denver. All they were doing was reacting to what you were saying and I was saying and a lot of other people were saying. Absolutely. Pure gut react. That's all it is. John says, the Pats played their best game this year so far. Randy Moss was blasting routes. Castle was completing passes, finally. Watson and Welker finally got into the game. Sammy Morris was amazing. And the man named after three existing Patriots, Ben Jarvis Green Ellis, looked fantastic in his first chance to shine. That's right. I like that. Three existing Patriots. It's true. The defense created turnovers, held Denver in check, caused mistakes. They played great. And the overall tone of the team was fired up, confident, able. They were reminded they can get it done. All right, good email, John. There's a reason, though, that you know a lot of that happened. Castle was finally completing passes because the Patriots had a running game, as we suggest in the opening hour today, to take the pressure off of him. Benjamin Watson finally got into the game because he was able to hold on to some footballs. He was thrown to the last week. He couldn't catch anything. I don't know what you mean by Welker finally getting in the game. I don't think Welker's ever been out of the game. In fact, Welker has been arguably the only offensive consistent player that they've had thus far this year. And, yes, Sammy Morris was simply amazing. It's true. He had a great game. And certainly hope that, and I think we all hope, that once we begin to update you on the injury reports, on the participation reports later this afternoon, that his knee bump or bruise or whatever it is, ends up turning out to be is a short-term situation. And it would be certainly a benefit to the Patriots if he can come back and play this Sunday. But don't be surprised if you, as we talked earlier, don't be surprised if we see maybe Lamont Jordan come back this next week since he was close to coming back anyway. Sammy Morris get the extra week off in order to become completely healthy. So it would be like, you know, trading one for the other, at least for this game against the Rams. And because the Rams have not been a very good team against the run, at least to this point in time this season, maybe the Patriots feel like that's something that they can live with for this next Sunday. Okay, this one comes from Caroline. And she says, ask PFW how in progress how I got my name. Oh, this is ping pong. Okay, well, we'll ask. Thank you. Appreciate that, Caroline. We'll ask that. She says, what a game. Reminded me of one of the games from last year. I think as a team, the Pats played great. And here are my pros and cons of the game. Pros, Sammy Morris was nothing short of a beast. He hit the hole running and hard, unlike Mr. Twinkletoes. And do you think if Maroney hit the hole like Morris did last night, he would run like Morris ran last night? Actually, yeah. I think that's a good point. It's a good point. Problem is that Maroney never did hit the hole like that, except for, you know, that brief, I think, stint toward the end of last season when he seemed to be able to get a clue and know that, you know, hey, you got to hit the hole and you got to attack it hard. You can't, you know, sidestep and dance before you get there. But, yeah, I think there's a chance that Maroney could have done as well as Sammy Morris had he chosen to hit the hole. And then she also says, who wants Castle cut now? I don't think anybody wanted him cut, but okay. I think he played a great game. If nothing else, the three touchdown passes will improve his confidence. Agreed there. One of the things he needs to work on, though, is going to his second read a little quicker. No question. You're dead on right there. You're dead on. Number three, the defense was outstanding. Besides forcing five turnovers, I think they did a solid job of stopping the run and getting to the ball quickly. No arguments. Obviously, forcing five turnovers was huge. Denver never had a chance, to get into the game because they kept leaving the ball on the turf. They did an okay job stopping the run. Not great, okay. They did get to the ball much more quickly, and I think part of that was because they had good run support from the secondary. Number four, the defense did a solid job of putting pressure on the quarterback, something that the Patriots lacked in the last game. I would also agree with that. Much better job up the middle. And from the outside backers, from Vrabel and Thomas, and at least if they didn't get to Cutler, which they did, sack him three times, I guess. If they didn't sack him, they certainly put pressure on him and forced him to hurry throws. And we combine that with the fact that Cutler hurt his finger on his throwing hand in the first play of the game by bouncing it off the helmet of a Patriot player. And I think it was Seymour that he bounced it off of. I think that combined to make it a very difficult night for Denver to get any kind of consistency. That's why you saw Patrick Ramsey come into the game, and he was lost out there as well. And then they decided, well, you know, let's put Cutler back in there since he can't get really hurt any worse. We can't, you know, worsen the injury he already had. But it definitely affected him. There's no doubt. And then she says, how do you guys think Hobbs played? In my mind, I think he played outstanding. There was that play when he came back and almost picked one of Denver's passes, and there was the third down play when he broke up the ball. Hobbs was pretty good. I thought his coverage was pretty close. He obviously had an opportunity against some big receivers. Obviously, Brandon Marshall is a beast himself. Big, tall, physical, tough receiver. I think that can be a very, very good one. Eddie Royals, you know, got that little scat back type thing going to him. So it's an interesting yin and yang type of situation that Denver has in terms of their receivers. If they can gain some consistency at quarterback with Cutler, offensively, you can see why and how Denver can move the ball. I thought Michael Pittman at running back did an okay job running the ball. Not great, but just okay. Patriots defensed him okay. Not great, just okay. But if you can see where if Pittman ever has an outstanding game and he's clicking on all cylinders and they're really pounding the ball up the middle, you can see where that passing game can be deadly with the type of receivers that Denver has. So you certainly got to give kudos to the Patriots defensively for coming up with a good game plan and trying to slow them down, if not shut them down altogether. All right, the con, she says, the offensive line did not perform well with the pass protection. They did a great job against the run, but six sacks is unacceptable. Although I bet Eric would like it. Ha, ha, ha. Very funny. Yeah, I mentioned that earlier. Yeah, six sacks is unacceptable. And my major nitpick from Monday night is the pass blocking from the offensive line. It was just horrific. Absolutely horrific. It's something that has definitely got to be worked on because, you know, teams are going to, you know, teams are going to rush. They're not going to have to blitz a guy like Castle. They're going to make Castle try to beat them with his arm. And so, you know, pressure's going to be on the offensive time to give him as much time as humanly possible to be able to get rid of the football and, you know, be able to be effective with his checkdowns and hit his secondary receivers and such. She also says, other than that, the Patriots played a solid game. On a side note, last week you thought I lived in Maine. It's Trampoline that lives in Maine. I live in the opposite direction of sunny Florida. Okay. Thank you very much. Appreciate the email. Excellent job out of you. Love the thoughts. Love the analysis. The analysis is all good, and I know many of you are just dying to share your own analysis of the game and everything else that we ask when we give you the question of the day, you know, via email here on the program. So by all means, there's no right or wrong answer here. You know, sometimes I know, you know, when we're flinging X's and O's around and giving our opinions based on what we're observing and that kind of stuff, I can understand we're too, you know, a passive fan. It could be somewhat intimidating. That's not the goal here. This is a forum for discussion for all fans, whether you're a serious fan or someone who has just a passing interest in the Patriots or in the NFL at large. And so there's no such thing as a stupid question. I tell my journalism class that. There's no such thing as a stupid question. The only stupid question is the one that you don't ask. So that's fine. That's fine. All analyses and opinions are welcome. This one comes from John in South Carolina, who says, Ben Jarvis seemed to run hard when I saw him. What are your impressions of him? Could he blossom into something? Ooh, you know, honestly, John, it's tough to It's tough to tell. I mean, I like the fact, as we spoke a little earlier, I like the fact that he seems to keep his center of gravity low to the ground, which makes him a tough to tackle running back. He does seem to have a pretty good burst off the line of scrimmage. But I think his lack of physicality overall would certainly keep him from being, you know, an every down type of back. He seems to me to be cut more in the mold of a Kevin Faulk, where he could be a change of pace back in the long term, as opposed to being someone who could get 15 to 20 carries a football game. Now, he was in there on Saturday for a couple reasons. Number one, because Sammy Morris was hurt. And number two, because, the Patriots knew they were going to run the football and they want to get a look at the guy. I mean, let's face it. You want to see what the guy's got. 13 carries, 65 yards, not too shabby. Fact is, though, that, you know, if you have to rely on him too much, you're going to potentially be in a little bit of trouble. So, I mean, when Ben Jarvis Green Ellis is in the game, it's one of two things. The game's either way out of hand or it's well in hand, one or the other. Or unless the Patriots have had some significant injury problems during the course of the game. You know, could he blossom into something? I'd like to see it happen against, say, the Baltimore Ravens. I'd like to see it happen, say, against the New York Giants or the Washington Redskins or teams that can really defend the run. You know, we could see that kind of performance where if the Patriot offensive line is actually creating some holes, I want to see how he does against a team that's thought to have a pretty good defensive line. Then I think we can get a more accurate assessment. He also says, will we be seeing any new offensive linemen next week? Did Light play in this one? I did not notice. Yeah, Matt Light was out there. And I don't know if that's just a wink, wink, nudge, nudge, slap at Light's play. I'm not quite sure because you can't always tell with emails. Matt Light was out there. I don't think we'll be seeing any new offensive linemen this week, barring injury. I do think that, you know, hopefully we'll see more and more of Stephen Neal as he rounds himself back into shape. I'm not sold on Billy Yates at all. I think that he is a weak link on the offensive line as it now stands. Is he a good lineman? He's an okay lineman. I think he's good in a pinch. I think he's good as a backup because you don't expect, you know, 50, 60 snaps out of your backups. You expect 50, 60 snaps out of your starter. And I don't think Billy Yates is a 50 or 60 snap kind of offensive lineman in the NFL. So hopefully Stephen Neal continues to round himself back into shape. We see more of him. So maybe that would be a new offensive lineman. But short of that, no, I don't think we'll see anybody else this week. That's kind of where we stand on that one. Okay, here we go. This one comes from Todd. This is the name game. Pick one. Castle or Trent Edwards? Ooh. You know, I love playing these games. All right, this is good stuff, actually, and a good time to bring it in, Todd. So let's do this. I'm going to hold on to that for a second. Let's take a time out here. We're still trying to track down Nick Wagoner from Rams.com. Hopefully we'll catch up with him today, and if not, then we'll have him for hopefully some point in time in tomorrow's show. But let's take a time out here. Remind you again, webradio@patriots.com is the email address, an excellent opportunity to jump in, especially if you've never had a chance to have your email read on the program previous, or if you have some questions that really don't have anything to do with either the game or the games that have been played, something in general, that's something we can take. And I'm surprised we haven't really had a whole lot of feedback on Rodney Harrison right now. Is it because you don't care? If you don't, that's okay. That says a lot, but what fans might think of Rodney. But my initial question, if you joined in the broadcast late today, is number one, in your estimation, is Rodney Harrison a Pro Football Hall of Famer? And number two, is he also a Patriots Hall of Famer? I'm interested in your opinions. Webradio@patriots.com. That's how you get us. Take a time out, and we'll continue with more Inside the Playbook.
What do I love at Qdoba Mexican Grill?
I love this Qdoba Catering.
If you've got a group of folks to feed, Qdoba Catering is totally the way to go.
You've got the hot taco bar.
The hot nacho bar.
The hot naked burrito bar.
Did I mention that they're hot?
I make the phone call, and they take care of everything.
People come and they
just help themselves.
They come with everything you'd need to feed a group of hungry people.
Marinated grilled chicken and beef.
Three kinds of salsa.
Fresh lettuce.
Guacamole.
Cookies and
brownies.
Homemade tortilla chips. chips.
Everything.
But we get Qdoba Catering for all kinds of different occasions.
Tailgate parties.
Soccer games.
Birthday parties.
Baby shower. For my son's graduation party. It's perfect for office meetings.
You open the door to the conference room, you get the smell of Qdoba.
Hot bars are totally unique.
It's incredible. People love it. It's fresh.
Affordable.
That's the easy way to plan a party.
That's what I love about Qdoba Mexican Grill.
That's what I love about Qdoba Catering.
Have a group to feed? Order a hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering and give them food they'll never forget. What are you going to love at Qdoba?
Big games mean big parties. Feed 20 or more of your friends with a Qdoba hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering. It's fast, fresh, and budget-friendly. Now with 16 Massachusetts locations, opening September at Patriot Place in Kenmore Square. Full menu available at Qdoba.com.
We know you have a busy day ahead of you, and mornings are always tough to get through. So stop by your local Dunkin' Donuts today and grab a freshly ground, freshly brewed Dunkin' Donuts coffee. It's the perfect thing to get you going in the morning. Dunkin' Donuts coffee is made with real Arabica beans, which give it that rich flavor everybody loves. And while you're there, try the new egg white flatbread sandwich from the new DD Smart menu. Choose from two delicious varieties, turkey sausage or veggie, both served on multi-grain bread. With under 300 calories, you can now make a smarter choice for breakfast. So, stop into your local Dunkin' Donuts today and try one with a medium hot coffee for only $3.99. Price and participation may vary, plus applicable taxes. Limited time offer.
Well, it's that time of year again where Sunday means you're doing something football. Whether it's tailgating in the parking lot, throwing the pigskin around, or just hanging in and watching the game on the tube, it's all about football. And when you're not watching football or playing football, well, I think we both know you're thinking football. And all that can make you a little hungry. That's why there's the tasty snack wrap from McDonald's. Snack wraps now come in your choice of three flavors. New Chipotle barbecue, honey mustard, and ranch. And they're available with grilled or crispy chicken. Delicious and easy to eat. It's the perfect game time snack. So grab one today. And when you do, if you're looking at that chicken select and it kind of reminds you of a quarterback in the middle of the pocket, except now he's surrounded by cheddar jack cheese, ranch sauce, and lettuce, well, maybe you're thinking just a little too much about football. McDonald's. I'm loving it.
When you've got a lineman-sized hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, first down Franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Miles and hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down Franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's, and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine, and Associate Grocers of New England, and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
Okay, I'm guessing this is because the World Series is starting tonight. Mini Gary, is that correct? Did you just decide we need a little World Series flavor tonight? Center field, right? Welcome back inside the playbook as we begin to head on the home stretch for a Wednesday, a Tuesday and Wednesday, if you will. Tomorrow, by the way, just for those of you who are interested in programming notes here. Tomorrow I am traveling. I'm doing the college football game Auburn at West Virginia for national radio on an affiliate near you in your neighborhood. So I will be en route to Morgantown, West Virginia this time tomorrow. So I think the boys, Eric and Michael from PFW, will be filling in my stead in the program. I know Eric Scalavino will be, and I think Mike Perrini is going to join him, and maybe even Brian Lowe as well. So I'm not sure what the schedule calls for. So what's that? What did you say? Oh, excellent. Good. Perfect. So just so you know, that's what's happening for tomorrow's show, and we'll join by phone at some point in time. All right. We've been able to track down Nick Wagner, who is the senior writer for Rams.com, and joined us now inside the playbook. Nick, thanks for a couple of minutes. Sure appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Sorry I missed you earlier there.
Don't worry about that. Hey, we all have jobs, right?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Sometimes dictated by other people, too, you know?
Yeah. Don't you just hate when that gets in the way, you know?
Yeah, yeah. It's unfortunate we can't all employ ourselves, I guess.
Yeah, that's very true. Well, let's talk about the guys who employ you. Two great wins the last week. So what the heck has happened?
Boy, there's a lot that's happened, you know, and really it kind of starts at the top with changing coaches and then going to Jim Hadley. You know, there's a lot to be said for leadership and attitude and all those things, and there's just a complete change in all of those areas since he became the head coach. And that's not to knock on the guy, Scott Linehan, who before, it's just a matter of some guys are leader of men and some guys are made that way and some guys aren't. And I think it really starts there, and then it kind of trickles down. There's a lot of other things too that are involved. You know, Leonard Little gets healthy and that completely changes the complexion of what you can do defensively, and you start getting some other guys. You know, Donnie Avery, a rookie, kind of emerges as a deep threat. So all those things that kind of happened all at the same time, and then it all came together, and you've seen the results the last couple of weeks.
Did this team quit on Scott Linehan?
You know, I don't think so. If that had happened, I think that they wouldn't have been competitive at all, which, you know, in the early games, they really weren't competitive. But that Buffalo game and then the New York game, they were right in those games until the fourth quarter, and they kind of folded up shop. And that's the difference, really. You know, when Jim Haslett, when he took this job, the first thing he said was, we have to find a way when we run into some adversity to just move on, just forget about it. And something this team hadn't done, because really there's not a lot of guys here who have been around the winter and had that experience of, okay, this is how we overcome when something goes wrong. Mm-hmm. And so that was an area that they really needed help in. And obviously, you know, within the first 5 minutes actually in that Washington game, Steven Jackson fumbles and it's like, uh-oh, here we go again. But they fought through it and they found a way to win the game and they would not have done that under Scott Linehan.
Best move that Jim Haslett has made since he's been the head coach, in your estimation?
You know, that's a tough choice. You know, putting Mark Bulger back at quarterback right away, I think was a really good thing. And you know, for Mark Bulger's confidence, if nothing else, it was really important to get that back, because in the waning days of Scott Linehan era, you know, it's been well documented that he and Mark Bulger didn't have the best relationship. And just getting that immediate vote of confidence that, hey, you're our guy. We need you to be a leader on this team. You know, we're paying you all this money. We need you to step up and do this job. And I think it really showed through. And really, Mark Bulger's taken on more of a leadership role than he has at any point in his career. And I think that's a direct reflection of what the head coach now is telling him to do.
Was it unfair, do you think, that he was removed from that job, Bulger?
You know, I do. There's a lot of issues that went into the offensive struggles. First of all, you got a new system in place with Al Saunders as the coordinator, and people are trying to learn that, and you have all these different things going on. And clearly, there's a lot of pressure to win in this league when you're a head coach, and sometimes maybe you hit the panic button. You know, clearly it wasn't that he hit the panic button too early. It's just maybe he hit the wrong panic button in that case. And I think that was kind of something that played into that decision. And, you know, Trent Green came in and played well, but he didn't play great. You know, he wasn't the magic elixir that maybe Scott Linehan was looking for, but he was looking to shake it up. So I don't think it was the right move at the time. I think a lot of people disagreed with the move. And clearly with Mark Bulger back at quarterback now, they're 2-0. So that maybe that kind of bears it out.
Nick Wagoner again, who's a senior writer for Rams.com, joining us here inside the playbook as the Rams and the Patriots will go at it 1 o'clock Eastern time Sunday at Gillette Stadium. What in your estimation is another of the large reasons, in addition to the change of leadership, I suppose, what's another of the big reasons that the Rams have been able to apparently turn it around as quickly as they have?
Yeah, you know, I kind of mentioned it a little earlier, the personnel things. When you have a couple of things that start working out, you know, that this team sorely, sorely, desperately needed some speed at wide receiver. You know, Torrey Holt's still an excellent runner, still fully capable, but it's hard when he's the only guy that's really a legitimate threat as a pass catcher. So, you know, Donnie Avery was the first receiver taken in the draft. There's a high second round pick on him. He comes in here, he's kind of injured during camp, doesn't get a lot of opportunities, finally gets healthy, and now they get him out there. And, you know, he's a speedy guy. He runs a 4.3 40. He's kind of a deep threat, kind of opens things up for Torrey Holt to get open, opening things up for the running game, all those things. So you get a guy like that back. Then you get Leonard Little back. And when you don't have Leonard Little, this team doesn't have a lot of pass rushers, guys who can create pressure on the quarterback without having to blitz. And when you get Little back in, you don't have to blitz as much. You can do a lot of other different things. You can be a little more unpredictable schematically and all those things. So, you know, a couple of really personnel changes. They've really started more of a rotation on the defensive line. Some of the younger guys, Clifton Ryan, has stepped in at nose tackle, and
and they're really doing a lot of different things on defense that have made them more successful. And really, when you look at it, the biggest thing they've done is they've started to get turnovers, and they haven't been giving the ball away. Since the fumble that I mentioned earlier Steven Jackson had in Washington, which is the first quarter 2 games ago, the Rams have had 0 turnovers and 7 takeaways. And I think anytime you have a percentage like that, you're gonna win some games.
No doubt about that. I think one of the intriguing things, Nick, that looks to me to be something that could even be in St. Louis's favor for Sunday is how the battle in the trenches matches up, because St. Louis's defensive line, I guess, looking at it across the front, you wouldn't call it gargantuan by any stretch of the imagination. They went up against certainly a bigger offensive line that Dallas had this last weekend and seemed to handle them pretty well. And the Patriots have had some problems, especially when it comes to pass blocking on the offensive line. So perhaps with a guy like Little, as you've already suggested, back into the fold and somewhat healthy, that could be a bonus for St. Louis.
Absolutely. I think that's an area that, almost to the point now where it's really the strength of the defense and maybe even the strength of the team as far as a unit. There may not be a group playing better than that defensive line right now. And, we've kind of been joking about it here today, because I know that the Patriots have been starting Mark LaVour over at right tackle. And, I know that maybe he won't be in the lineup this week. Maybe you get healthy there. But, he was actually here in training camp, and he spent some time on the roster last year. And we were aware of what kind of player he is, and he's not necessarily a starting player in this league, and so that's a matchup we were kind of joking with Leonard Little about, what kind of advantage he would have there. Of course, he's not going to bite on that or play that game, but there's just some things that you see advantages that you can take advantage of, and maybe if you plug that in, then that's what happens in the game. So we'll kind of have to wait and see, but the defensive line right now is playing as well as any unit on this team.
Offensively speaking, with Bulger back controlling things, it certainly helps to have a guy like Steven Jackson, who was named the NFC Offensive Player of the Week this week, running like he's currently running.
Yeah, absolutely. And the one thing is Steven Jackson is a little banged up. He suffered a slight strain to his thigh in the waning moments of that win against Dallas last week. So kind of waiting to see. He didn't practice today, and I think he'll probably maybe do a little bit of individual work tomorrow, but they're going to kind of wait and see till Friday. Hopefully they're hoping that he can get some snaps on Friday and get some repetitions and be ready. But he's the key to the offense. He's the guy that makes it all go, and Al Saunders wants him the ball as many times as he can. They use him in the passing game. He's very effective between the tackles, and he has underrated speed if he can get out on that edge, as Dallas found out that not many people are going to catch him from behind. So there's no doubt that if Steven Jackson's going as good as he can go, he's as good as anybody in the league.
It seems that if, let me flip it back to the other side defensively, because it seems if there's an Achilles heel, it looks like the Rams have had some trouble stopping the run at times this year. Why do you think that is, and what do you think are the what's the outlook for things getting better?
I think the biggest reason that they've had struggles against the run are a lot of mental mistakes. If you get a guy out of position, you got a guy who misses his run gap, misses his fill, doesn't necessarily play assignment football the way he's supposed to do, and then somebody gets out of the gate, because we call it the H ratio around here, because there's a local radio guy who always says, well, if you take this play, and this play away, then they only average this much. Well, obviously you can't take those plays away, but they have a tendency for giving up big runs, and a lot of times they're really good about the 1, 2, 3 yard runs. They hold them to that, and then all of a sudden a guy makes a mistake and he gets out of the gate for a big gain. So that's really one area that they've really tried to clamp down on. Clinton Portis had a pretty good week 2 weeks ago, although, again, it was another one of those situations where he had a couple of long runs. And then even this past week, Marion Barber had one 35-yard run. The rest of his 17 carries went for, like, 70 yards, which is pretty good if you can do it on a normal basis. So it's really for them just finding a way to limit the big plays and keep guys from getting big gains on just one carry.
Any surprise that Eddie Kennison was released again?
No, it wasn't a surprise. Right now, they're actually carrying 8 receivers on the roster just because they've been a little banged up at that position. Drew has a foot injury. He's still out. He'll be out for a couple more weeks. Dane Looker had a concussion in a little incident where they found an abnormality on his CAT scan. And so there's some different things that was the reason that he was kept around after he was released the first time. So, he hadn't made any catches, and it was just kind of a numbers game at that point where they had some injuries at other positions where they needed to fill in on the roster. So not a real surprise there.
All right, and then because a lot of Patriots fans certainly probably aren't going to be as familiar with the Rams as they would be, oh, I don't know, say against the Bills or the Dolphins. Can you give us what you think is an unsung area of this Rams football team in terms of their personnel? Somebody that has proven to you, or at least shown to you, that they have the potential to be pretty good and has kind of flown under the radar.
Yeah, you know, I think they've had a couple of guys that have emerged and maybe people don't know about. You know, the free safety is Shimogo Atagwe, and, you know, he had 8 interceptions last year, which was tied for the lead in the NFC, and really didn't get a whole lot of recognition for it. This year, he's already got 3 interceptions he had against Dallas the other day. And he's a guy who, in those last 14 games, has 10 interceptions. So he kind of has a nose for the ball. He had the 75-yard fumble recovery against Washington for a touchdown. So he's a guy that's kind of flown under the radar. I don't think he's as well known because he's not necessarily a big hitter, or, you know, not really cut from the Polamalu or Ed Reed type of mold, but he's a very good player. He's always around the ball, and he has that knack for coming up with it. So he's a guy. And then at cornerback, they have a young guy named Ron Bartel who's really kind of settled in and outside and become kind of a real solid cover man. So they have some guys that kind of fly under the radar in their secondary. And, you know, obviously earlier in the year when they were getting just really, really beat up in the secondary, getting, you know, a lot of big plays they were giving up, obviously, in that first game, you know, against Philadelphia and on down the line. But they've really kind of come into their own. And, again, that's all kind of a product, too, of having a pass rush. So it all kind of plays together. But those are a couple of guys that I think people maybe don't know about that they could someday soon.
All right, we'll have to get to doing our homework on a Shimogo Atagwe. By the way, love the name. It's a good one.
You sound like you handled it pretty well by now. OJ.
What's that, OJ?
You can call him OJ, but he prefers a Shimogo in print, but you can call him OJ to his face.
There you go. Sounds good. Nick, we appreciate the time. Thanks so much. Safe travels when you come this way.
You got it.
Thanks. It's Nick Wagner, senior writer for Rams.com, visiting with us here inside the playbook. All right, before we wrap up, and I'm going to get you off to the conference call that Rams running back Steven Jackson just held with members of the Patriots media. But I want to get back just very quickly to Todd's email when he's talking about playing the name game. Castle or Trent Edwards? I'd have to say right now, even though I'm becoming more and more a Matt Castle fan, I'd have to say Trent Edwards in terms of his overall experience and what he's done for Buffalo. Castle or Derek Anderson? Based on the way they're playing now, I'm going to go with Castle. Castle or Chad Pennington? He says. I think I'd still have to go with Pennington. Castle or JT O'Sullivan? Castle. Castle or Kerry Collins? Castle. I've never liked Kerry Collins. Castle or Drew Bledsoe in his prime? Bledsoe. Okay. There you go. Wanted to play that game with you, Todd, because I always like when you do that. So that's good stuff. Like to play, would you? That's what I call the game. Would you? Would you take so-and-so over so-and-so? And why would you take them? So good stuff. Good email there. All right. Now, tomorrow's program again, because I'll be in transit. I'll be joining by phone at some time. I will have the guys in the studio hold down the fort. And, of course, we'll have Russell Baxter from ESPN as a part of the Thursday show, as he always is, again, because it's a short week, and we're playing football again on Sunday. How great is this? We step right from one game into another. I must wish they could all be like this. Of course, I don't think the guys down the hallway feel the same way about that. You know, need a little help here. All right, Steven Jackson, Rams running back, was just named NFC Offensive Player of the Week for his performance in their big 34-14 win over the Dallas Cowboys. Meeting with members of the Patriots via conference call.
You know, obviously you guys have gone through a little bit of a turnaround here. I know in week one, Pac-Man Jones had a comment that concerning the Eagles where he said it's the Rams, dude. I know you guys heard that. Does that hearing that kind of thing kind of provide motivation for you?
Well, at the time, it was really too far ahead for us to even really be concerned with his comments. We were well aware of them. But, you know, when you're going through an 0-4, starting off 0-4, you're just trying to find the solutions within the locker room and the organization to get the things turned around. You know, once we got that big win in Washington and we faced the Cowboys, he wasn't with the team. But it's definitely motivation. Not only the comment that they only faced the Rams, but it was, you know, analysts that was comparing or saying that, you know, some college teams could beat us, you know. We take pride in what we do, and, if, you know, we got off to a rough start, but, you know, I'm glad that we've been able to turn it around.
What's the difference? What has Coach Haslett done over the last couple of weeks, and what has he brought that maybe Coach Linehan couldn't at the end?
To be honest with you, I don't know. You know, it's a kind of funny situation. You hate that someone had to lose their job, and you hate that anyone has to take the blame for, you know, all 53 men and the coaching staff and that on top of that for losing. But after the bye, I think a lot of guys, you know, took that week off and really took a step away from football and kind of renewed their love for it and said that we can either turn this thing around or have a rough 12-game stretch. And, you know, going through 3-13 season, that's something that a lot of guys around here didn't want to do again. So, I mean, we still have a long way to go to fully say that we turned the ship around, but we started off well.
Steven, how's the leg feeling?
The leg feels good. You know, we're not quite sure. We're still going to see what's going to happen for Sunday. But I was able to do some rehab work with our weight coach, do some light lifting and some light pool work, you know. And we're just going to go from there. We're going to take it day to day. I'm pretty good with kind of having a feel for my body and know where I'm at. But, you know, I feel good, and especially compared from Sunday.
Did missing all that time in training camp, do you feel that slowed you at the start of the season, or were you ready to go right from the get-go?
I'm actually coming into the fold of things. I came in great shape. I was down on my weight and on my body fat. So I know you can't simulate all the things on a football field, but as far as my conditioning-wise, I felt that I was right there ready.
Steven, I know you talked a little bit about the start. I mean, what in your mind was really the low point of that 0-4 start?
I don't know if I can really say one thing was the low point, but I just think as a team in general, we're finishing games. We're playing four complete quarters of football, and in those first four games, I don't think we can say that. You know, we competed in all four games, but at some point, we let it get away from us, and then, you know, guys kind of really got down in the dumps, and now that when we hit adversity in a game, you can see guys fight through it, and I really think that's the difference between these last two games from the first four.
Steven, did you watch any of the Patriots' Monday night game against the Broncos?
I watched a little bit of it, that first half, but after that, I didn't watch any more. I thought the guys played well, like I expected them to at home. You know, it's Monday night, and the New England Patriots are used to playing on TV and in big games. So I figured that their defense would come out and dominate, and their playmakers will make plays, and that's exactly what happened.
What do you see from the Patriots' front seven in terms of they had some pretty good success shutting down LaDainian Tomlinson a few weeks ago, and obviously they're going to try to take you out of your game?
They do a great job running the 3-4 scheme. They probably run it, if not the best, one of the best in the National Football League. You know, the guys are really sound in their responsibilities and their gaps, and they do a great job of tackling. And once, you know, you do those two things, you can see why the team was 18-0 in the regular season last year in the playoffs. You know, we just had to – it's one of those games where I'm not quite sure the weather's going to be nice, but it's one of those games that you just have to be patient. Keep pounding away, and if I come out and do have a chance to play and I have a little to no yards, but we can keep them honest and respect the run game, I'll be happy with that if we come out with a win. So I'm not really concerned about numbers. I'm more concerned about being able to contribute to my team and help them get a win. But first thing is first is making sure my quad's ready.
No disrespect to Trent Green, but did you feel it was a good move going back to Mark Bulger?
Well, you know, it was a move that we were looking for something to turn the spark around, and it didn't work. And I think Mark is a guy that you can't rule him out. He's a competitor, and once he has protection, he'll put the ball where it needs to be. You know, we're in an offense that we have spots on the field to throw to, and I think Mark does that with the best of them.
Did you feel at all like Coach Linehan lost the team?
No, I don't think Coach Linehan lost the team. It's just the NFL, National Football League, you know. Sometimes you dealt a good hand, sometimes you dealt a bad hand. And starting off with the four teams this season, you know, it was a rough four games. And we went winless, and now unfortunately you're seeing this trend of coaches losing their job in the middle of the season.
Steven, when you were 0-4, coming off the bye week, you had a little bit of boost, I guess, with the coaching change. But you look at the schedule and you had Redskins, Cowboys, Patriots. that looked pretty daunting. What was the mindset going into that?
Well, you can't never look ahead. You know, you just take one game at a time. Washington was 4-1 on a 4-game winning streak. Dallas is probably the most talented team in the National Football League, and you guys have yourselves. So you just take one game at a time. If you look ahead, that's when you see guys, teams fall to, I don't want to say quote-unquote gimme games, but, I mean, it is the NFL. You know, every team has superstars.
How big a confidence builder is being, you just called Dallas the most talented team. How big a confidence boost was that for you guys, and how big a hurdle was it beating them?
Well, I do want to get one thing straight. I mean, we have talent in this locker room, too. We just weren't clicking. So for anyone to just look at it as a gimme game, that's their problem and that's their fault. But we're going to come out and execute, and at the end of 60 minutes, we'll see what the scoreboard say.
Still, though, you said that they were the most talented team, so it had to be a hurdle, right, to beat them and maybe a confidence boost for you guys?
We're talented, too. I don't know if you heard me.
Steven, just I know you probably met with every team coming out in the draft. If I recall, at the time, the Patriots for a while there were running backless without Antoine Smith at the time when you were coming out. Do you recall any interaction with the Patriots at all at that time when you were coming into the league?
For you guys, for the Patriots acquired Corey Dillon, there was some talk that I may end up in New England, but it wasn't anything for sure. We knew that it was going to be some free agents out there that may entice some teams, and Corey Dillon came up and he was available, and you know, it really worked out for New England. He's a veteran guy, and I understand taking a risk of trying to draft a rookie, seeing how he's going to pan out compared to a guy you've seen in the league that's proven. So at one point, you know, it could happen, but it didn't.
Had you taken the come up here at all and met with any of the folks here?
In my draft, when I was coming out, I didn't take any bids, actually.
Mm-hmm. How about the young receivers, specifically Avery? How are they helping you?
Well, they're helping tremendous. You know, it allows for safeties to now have to respect his speed and his deep threat ability, and it also frees up Torrey. So the emergence of Avery these last two games has really helped our passing game. It allows us to stretch the field, get into the opposing team side of the ball, well, on their end of the field and into the red zone. So it helps out everyone.
Is that it, guys?
Yep.
Steven, thank you. Good luck.
Thank you.